Hey, happy day to you. I hope you are having a great day. It is yours truly, your friend, the hostess with the mostest, Rashan Ali. And today we are joined by Tiffany Porter. She is a cool soror of Alpha Kappa Alpha Sorority Incorporated. And when I tell you, you will be inspired by her story. Talking about somebody who, talking about somebody who has never given up. Who has never given up despite her circumstances. And this story will definitely allow you to see that when people push through, regardless of what they've been through, amazing things will happen. And that is what has happened and what continues to happen in the life of Tiffany Porter. But before we get to Tiffany Porter's episode, I have to let you know that Green Top Gifts is the place you need to go for all of your amazing wrapping paper for the holiday season. Time is running out. Yes, do you need your Clarence Claus wrapping paper, stocking stuffers, or your hoodies? Please log on to greentopgifts.com, punch in Cool Soror, and receive 10% off of your purchase. GreenTopGifts.com. Also, Founders and Pearls. Get ready for your Founders Day box. We need for you to go ahead and place your order. Founders and Pearls has exclusive paraphernalia, motivational items, and it's all from small businesses because they're a company that supports small businesses. And if you punch in Cool Soror at closeout, you will receive free shipping, okay? FoundersandPearls.com. And here's Tiffany Porter with Agent Survivor. You will enjoy. You know you gotta be a cool soror to talk to the cool soror herself.
I'm a cool soror.
Hey y'all.
I'm a cool soror of.
What's up y'all? I'm a cool soror of.
Hi, I am a cool soror of.
Soror Podcast, hosted by me, Rashan Ali. It is another edition of the Cool Soror Podcast, and very, very happy to be joined by this woman right here because she does a whole lot, and it's just very intriguing, her entire career path and what she is doing now. Tiffany Porter joins the Cool Soror Podcast, and Tiffany, you are a Cool Soror of...
Alpha Kappa Alpha Sorority Incorporated.
Welcome to the show. How are you?
I'm doing well. Thank you for having me.
My absolute pleasure. You are an NFL agent, criminal defense attorney, real estate agent. What else? Mom, wife, like what else? Am I missing anything?
No, that about sums it up.
Yeah.
I try to, you know, do it all and wear many hats. Mm-hmm. I always said that once I passed the bar, that this bar card was going to be used in many ways.
Right.
Never be broke.
Really? Never be broke. So you just constantly on the hustle to find new ways to make money.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Well, let's talk about that. You know, I always like to start from the beginning. Did you always have this zest for law and why?
Absolutely. I wanted to be a lawyer since second grade.
Yeah.
Well, little backstory. My mother was in and out of prison all through my childhood. And with seeing her in and out, I said, you know what? I want to be on the other side of that. And mm-hmm. what would it take for me to be on the other side and to advocate for people like her?
Right.
And I said, you know, I want to be a lawyer. I want to do good.
Yeah.
You know, you see, you know, your parents not doing so well. And so I said, well, I want to do the opposite. And what's the opposite of that?
Yeah.
Let me become a lawyer and do well for the family. Because mm-hmm. at that point, no one in my family even went to college. I'm the first with the college degree, let alone a law degree.
Right.
And so I just kept focus on that I wanted to be a lawyer. I wanted to really have something sustainable for my family.
Yeah.
And so that, you know, other people in my family, my sisters and my brother could, you know, follow behind me.
Yeah. So because you were forced to live life early on.
Yes.
How did that change you? Because you had to pretty much mother your siblings.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
How did it change you?
So when she first went in, I was about 6 years old, and she was gone for about 4 years.
Oh my.
So I went, and at that time my father wasn't really in the picture, and then he was murdered when I was about 8. So I was sent to live with, you know, great grandmother, grandmother. Mm-hmm. You know how back in the day, just you you're with, you know, anyone in the family that will take you all in. Right, and so my great grandmother, I mean, I thank God for her to this day. She really came in and said, you know, we're going to, you know, take care of the kids and do what needs to be done. So we got split up for some time. But for me, I had to really step up to the plate. So at about 10, I had to kind of take the reins of an adult. I was expected to do things. Uh-huh. I was already changing diapers at 6 and 7 because I had 2 younger siblings.
Right, right.
And then when my mother came home, when I was 10, she moved us to New Jersey.
Okay.
And that just started a whole new life for me. But little did I know, I was so excited to be with my mother, but my mother had a different agenda at that time.
Okay.
so she still was doing her thing.
Okay.
And that meant that I had to be mom. Now I really was mom. I didn't have my great grandmother, my grandmother, and my mother was
absent.
In and out,
right.
pretty much. I mean, I could remember, I talk to my kids now, I can remember days of not having my mother at home, and we went to school. I mean, I made sure things were done.
And you were, at this point, you were 10 at this point?
10 years old at that point. And, you know, a few years went by, and then my mother had twins. And I said, oh, my gosh, this is going to be crazy. You know, at that point, I'm 12. I said, you know, how is this going? You know, what's going to happen to me? I knew, though, with my great-grandmother's teachings, that she told me, you know, with an education, that I could do anything. And so I was always, my family calls me the overachiever. I was like, I got to make straight A's. I got to do this because I'm getting the heck up out of here.
Yes.
I mean, that's the way I looked at it at home, because I said, I have to get away. When she had the twins, she went back to prison, and we were just like, okay. So then my great-grandmother, my grandmother moved to New Jersey to help.
Okay, so they moved into the home that your mother had. Well, now she was back in prison at this point.
And so I really had to step up to the plate. When I tell you, I still have marching band pictures with the 2 babies on my hip. One on each hip.
Yeah.
Because I had to take my sisters. If I wanted to be involved in activities,
you had to take them.
Had to take them with me. So everybody knew me, like Tiffany and the babies. You know, I had them with me. I had my brothers and sisters. I was like, we're going to do this. And then I became a cheerleader. I was in so much in school, you would have never known what was going on at home.
Right.
Because that was my sense of normalcy.
Yes.
I never let my friends come over to the house. They never knew what was going on. We walked. I took the bus. I didn't have, you know, rides, but I made sure that no one would see that because I wanted to be normal,
right,
like my friends,
uh-huh,
and participate in things and just have some sense of normalcy. But
because you knew something at home, you knew what was going on at home was not normal.
Oh, right.
Yeah.
Right. I knew that that was not normal. And from visiting friends' homes and going and seeing, okay, well, this is not, you know, this is what I'm used to all my life. But, you know, I had to really stand in the gap for my mother, and you know, and I worked and did what I needed to do. And it wasn't really until I went to college that I got that release.
Yes.
Got that release and was like, oh my gosh, you know, I'm living my life.
Yeah. When you left to go to Hampton, though, and then you still had your siblings at home, what was going on at that point when you left to go to college?
Well, I joke with my mother because she was home for every milestone. So she would be home
for graduations.
She's okay with this now.
Okay.
She would be home for graduations and then be gone. So while I was in high school, first 3 years she wasn't there. Senior year, she was home. Then she was there for graduation. And once I went on to college, she went back into prison. And so she was in prison until I graduated, got ready to graduate from college. She was there. She didn't meet my son until he was almost 2, because she was in prison. And at that point, our relationship was really strained. I was just tired of
because it was at this point it become toxic to you.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. And I just said, you know what, I'm going to separate myself from this. And I really didn't have a lot of contact with her while I was in college.
None, very minimal.
Yeah, very minimal. And my family was like, well, you know, they didn't really want me to go to college because they wanted me to stay home and help. But they were like, you're kind of on your own. You go to college, we don't know who's going to pay for it and what you're going to do. And I was like, I don't care. I'm out of here. I have to do something. And I knew that my siblings would be okay. It was, you know, they were a little heartbroken that I left.
Yeah.
But they understand now why I had to leave.
Yes.
Because that was not going to be good for me and what I needed to do in order to come back and help them.
Right. Because you could have very easily been stuck in that situation. And, you know, a lot of things are cyclical. And yes, you had to break the cycle.
Absolutely.
Did you have any guilt?
I did. Maybe the first 2 years of college, going home and visiting,
yeah,
and seeing how it was. Because now let me back up. My grandmother was not your typical grandmother either. So
okay,
we're only 34 years apart.
Oh.
And she was still doing her thing, honey. So yep, she was like, you know, I'm grandma, but
I'm really not grandma.
Yeah,
like
really
that.
Not. I don't have time for all of this, you know. Yep. So she did what she knew best.
Mm-hmm.
And coming from, it was a cycle. She didn't really take care of her children. So now she's taking care of my mother's children. But it's out of, I'm doing this because, I mean, I have to.
Yeah.
Otherwise, they would be in foster care.
Mm-hmm.
But she held it together as much as she could.
And as much she knew how to.
Yes.
Yes.
So I understand that now. But going home, it was just like, you know, the same thing. Nothing had really changed. So I would come right back into the parent role when I came home.
Yeah.
And I was ready to go right back to school just to get away from it. I needed it.
Yeah.
You know, but I mean, over time, I understood that I could not carry all of the burden.
Yeah.
It couldn't always be on me.
Mm-hmm.
I had to begin to release it.
Yeah.
It was really hard to begin to release that and release that guilt.
Yeah. Man, that was a lot very early on in the interview, which is, I mean, and every interview has its own personality, but this is such compelling information that you're telling about your family. How are you and your mother now?
Oh, we're great. She lives here in Georgia.
Okay.
And my kids, you know, they love her. They don't know that part of it.
Okay.
But I will say they know a little bit of it because when I graduated from law school, she went back to prison, and I said, okay, this time, you know, I'm going to tell her this is the last time that I'm doing this with you. So we made it. I made it a ritual. My kids don't remember, which is good. They remember a little bit, but they were little. Every Sunday after church, we would go to visit her.
Mm-hmm.
She was right off of Boulevard at the Metro State Prison.
Mm-hmm.
And we would go visit her every Sunday, and that's what we made it. And I told her, I said, I am not doing any more bids with you. This is it. And is this the way that you want to see your grandchildren grow up? You know, so I would hope that after this, that you are done.
Yeah.
And so I did that for 3 years. And everybody was like, I can't believe, you know, you're doing that. But I was just in a different mind state. And I said, you know, I'm going to that last time, I won't say it was her fault. She still had things lingering from the past that she never went to handle.
Okay.
And so we always said, Mom, you know, it's going to catch up to you. And that's mm-hmm. what happened. So I said, okay, you know, you didn't do anything new, but I'm going to stick it out with you. And since then, she's been home and she's been fine.
Okay, good.
We haven't had anything, but she knows that I don't play any games.
Yeah, yeah. How are your siblings? How
They're
are they?
Great. You know, I would say this. We are really blessed that none of us followed in my mother's path.
Oh, wow. That's beautiful.
The five of us. No one's ever been in jail. No one's ever done drugs. No one's.
Because was that the demon? Was it drugs?
I would say not for the reasons why she went to prison, but she did have drug issues. And we had a lot of drug issues with the adults in the family.
Okay.
So if you can imagine, you know, living in a home and, you know, all of the adults are in the basement getting
right,
high.
Right.
And the kids are, you know, we're really fending on our own. But I say for me, that's what got me here today.
Yes.
I mean, the drive. I wouldn't have the drive and the wherewithal without going through those things.
Yes.
I wouldn't wish it on any other child or any other person to go through those things, but it just makes you stronger.
Yes.
I mean, what doesn't kill you makes you stronger. But I have a great relationship with her now. She has a better relationship, I would say, now with my children, and that's what I love.
Yes.
They love their Nana.
She can get it right with them.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
And that's beautiful. How did you have, why is your heart so forgiving? Because you could easily be angry and be like, I'm done with you. You live
right.
your life. I'm good. You weren't there for me. Bye.
Right.
Why not?
Well, because then I would be bitter.
Yeah.
And I would I would, if I let that, I had to forgive her to release me, you know. Mm-hmm. And if you don't do that and you live with that hurt and that pain, it begins to eat at you. It doesn't hurt the other person.
Yeah.
And so for me, I saw friends in college who didn't have their parents, like they were deceased. And they would say to me, at least you have your mom. I mean, I know she's in jail, but at least you have her. And I'm like, you know, really? That's mm-hmm. not a consolation. But I began to think about those things. And I said, you know what? For me to live my best life,
yes,
I have to forgive her. I have to forgive her. And then understanding and kind of going back to some of the history of what happened between her and my grandmother,
uh-huh.
and then the dynamics of what happened in my grandmother's life, you begin to understand, okay, this is what she knew. This yeah. is not something, she didn't just have kids and just abandon us just because. This is the life that she led. I mean, my grandmother was in prison at one point. She doesn't talk about it much,
okay.
but you know, there's some history behind that. So I have to understand that. And so yeah. I said, you know, it's for me to make the change and for me to forgive so that I can live the best life. You
yeah.
know, there were times when my mother wasn't there. I mean, and my grandmother, that I was so heartbroken. So I was molested when I was about 6 years old. And I was one of those that told. Uh-huh. And I always tell women this, and I tell my kids this story. You know, I told, and yeah. nothing was done.
Oh, man. They kept it the secret, the family
it's
secret.
The secret, and it's the, you know, the shame is on you, kind of. We're going to isolate you from the people that did these things to you.
Right.
And, you know, it wasn't until about maybe 2 years ago. I mean, this happened, like I said, when I was six. 2 years ago that, you know, I confronted my grandmother about it. Because I said,
because she never did anything.
Right. I was like, are we ever going to talk about this? And so we had this big family meeting and I brought it up. And she said to me, I didn't know what to do. She said, I did not know what to do. And I did what I thought was best at the time.
And that was just isolate you from that particular person.
Right. Well, people, and not really, I mean, nothing came of it, you know. And so for me, I had to live with that and live with, I'm kind of on my own here, you know, and how do I deal with this? And then my mother not being there, she couldn't do anything. So you, when you go through things like that, it just makes you, because people are always like, well, how do you do all these things? How can you do it? I'm like, if you only knew.
Yeah.
You know, breast cancer is the tip of the iceberg. That's
yes.
not even. When breast cancer came, I was like, oh, please.
Yeah.
I've been through worse.
Oh, my God. Okay. So you said so much.
I know.
So you dealt with this, someone violating you at 6 years old, and then you're raising your siblings at 10. What about you and your self-care? Did anyone ever say she needs therapy? Did you go and seek therapy even at a later time in your life? When did you say, I know the hustle was there because you
right.
had to get out of the situation.
Right.
What about you?
Well, Tiffany probably didn't start taking care of Tiffany until probably college.
Okay.
And I sought out professors that really became like those moms and dads. And I will say this, going to an HBCU is like no other.
None.
I still have my teacher. She was my vocal teacher for 4 years. When you're a music major, you end up having the same professor or the same coach that goes with you for the 4 years. And to this day, I still go to her house. She
wow.
still calls me at least once a month to check on me. I mean, she is my family.
Mm-hmm.
And when I went there, I just like latched on to her because I was always looking for that mother
yes.
or a mother figure in someone. And I had a neighbor that was really close to the family. And I call her my second mom as well because, you know, you have people that pour into you.
Yeah.
And so I've had, I say, those quote unquote surrogate mothers along the way. But I would say college is when I really began to deal with it and come into my own and kind of have that freedom, you know. And again, I wanted to be normal. So I didn't want anyone to know about my life and what I went through. You know, I had friends that their moms were doctors and lawyers. And I was like, you know, that's what I'm going to be.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't want anyone to know where I'm from. At the time, I was ashamed of it.
Yeah.
I wasn't really ready to tell my story. But as I began, you know, going through college and then law school, and then being deeply rooted into a church here
yes, yes.
In Georgia, that really helped me and I began to seek the help and the women's groups to really get through it and begin to forgive. I didn't understand how much baggage I was carrying and for how long. And I said, you know, it's time to release these demons and release these strongholds on my life that I didn't realize that I was still carrying.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so, you know, there were people along the way that really, really, you know, played a pivotal point. I mean, they really helped to structure my path.
And shift it completely. Yes,
absolutely.
Man. And so you finish Hampton and then you decide to. So you were a music major at Hampton?
Yes.
So you sing too?
Yes. Sing, dance, and act. So I was in theater, and that's what I've always loved to do.
This
I love
child
to
right
do.
Here, honey. I'm just going to know everything about you before the end of this interview.
I know, right?
Yes. Sing, dance, and act. So you never wanted to, like, fully pursue that head on? Or
I did, but.
Because your skin is, I mean, you're beautiful.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, I didn't always think I was beautiful.
Yeah.
You know, we had that struggle, too.
I hear you. We had that same conversation on our show today. When did you realize you were beautiful? And I'm like, my latter 30s?
Yeah.
That's when I was like, I'm a bad chick.
Exactly.
Man. But it took a while.
Exactly.
Yeah.
It took, you know, and you go through these things, and that's why, you know, when I tell, like, my backstory, you know, you still have issues that other people are going through as well, and that whole color, you know. It wasn't until I got to Hampton that I was like, oh, my gosh. We are beautiful in all colors.
Me too.
In all colors. And I went to a predominantly white high school, and it really wasn't my white peers. It was my other, my black peers who, you know, always made fun of my skin complexion, my lips. I was just like, you know, I always felt like I was just ugly, super ugly. Mm-hmm. And they would call me names like dark and ugly instead of dark and lovely.
Oh, my God.
You know, but hey, you know, the gag is when you see them now.
But you be like, remember that time? Yeah. Look at you, look at me.
Hitting you up and, you know, right. Know what's going on with you. So it is... I mean, I went through that and just feeling that I was not worthy, that I wasn't cute, that the best thing I had going for me was my body, you know, because you're told that. And, you know, and so when I got to college, I always wanted to wear some skin tight stuff and, you know, show. And then I was involved in everything. But it was there that I saw. I was like, well, I don't have to be like this.
Right.
You know, I mean, everyone here is smart. Everyone's doing their thing. And, you know, I had somebody tap me on the shoulder like, sweetie, you don't need to do that.
Wow.
You don't need to do that.
Was it a peer or was it someone?
Someone hired my professor.
The professor.
Same one.
Same woman.
Same woman.
Yeah.
And she is a woman of Alpha Kappa Alpha.
Yes. Yes.
And she said, you know, you don't need to do all that. We're going to. You know, you're going to stop this madness.
Right.
And that's what I like in HBCU. They take you by the hand and say, hey, you know, we're
calm
not going to do
down.
This.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah,
ooh.
Yeah.
Okay. So you decide to go to law school. You get accepted in Emory University. I mean, very prestigious law school.
Yeah.
You go through law school. And then do you immediately get into sports? Or where did the sports part come for you, your love of sports come from?
Well, I was always a student athlete. I ran track and I loved football. Always was just interested and intrigued by it. I always wondered why we couldn't play. I wanted to play. And everybody said, well, you know, you can become a cheerleader. I became a cheerleader and I followed it all the way through. So once I went into law school, I said, okay, you know, what am I thinking about besides being a criminal defense attorney? I knew I always wanted to do that. I said, well, I love entertainment. And the odd thing is I'll go back. When I was 17, I got pulled over in New Jersey. I only had my permit, but my grandmother would let me take her car all the time. So I had my permit. I ended up getting arrested because I only had a permit.
Right.
So got arrested and they hired a lawyer that, you know, to help me through the process. You know, it was nothing major, just a little slap on the wrist. But I talked to him and he said, well, you can go to your undergrad, you can major in whatever it is that you want, whatever it is that you're interested in, major in that. So that's where I said, well, I love music. And that's really, if I could drop everything, that's what I would do. And so I said, I'm going to go into music and then do music and law, do some entertainment law while I was in law school. But things change as you begin to learn the law.
Yeah.
And law school is really not application. So I had quite a few friends that were in the NFL at the time. And by the time law school was over, they were out.
Mm-hmm.
Out or getting out. And a lot of them were broke. And I said, well, what's going on? You know, what happened? What's going on? And not that they blamed their agent, but they did not have that support system behind them once the money was gone.
Yeah.
So I said, well, what did your agent put in place for you? What were things put in place for you for the future? And they said, well, we didn't really think about that.
They were just doing the now.
Right. Wow. Right. So for me, I said, you know what? I eventually want to build a company that can help these players, help them from the ground up to build a brand.
Yes.
And so for me, I said, let me get my feet wet into the on the legal side and really build up my law firm first so that I can have a good foundation to then help these players in any facet. So mm-hmm. now when I'm helping athletes, I can help them with anything with family law, real estate law,
yes.
criminal law. I mean, you know, when we think about criminal, it's just not rapists and murders. Criminal law is DUI.
Yes.
Traffic tickets, that's all under the criminal sector.
Uh-huh.
So for me, it was better for me to have those things under my belt before going into the NFL and what is really cutthroat.
Yes.
And into that business. So that's what made me want to go into the business. And I began my law firm first, and about maybe 5 years after starting the law firm, then that's when I started the sports agency.
We'll be right back with more of this episode of the Cool Sore Podcast after I encourage you to log on to greentopgifts.com, because I just need for you to be ready for the holidays. What better way than to come downstairs, walk down the hall, wherever your Christmas tree is, and to see some amazing gifts wrapped in amazing new wrapping paper. I love Clarence Claus. Clarence Claus is absolutely somebody who looks like my grandpa or your grandpa. And it just puts a smile on your face. It just makes you feel happy. Not only do Green Top Gifts have everything for your wrapping paper needs, but they also have amazing stocking stuffers and stickers that feature Clarence Claus. He's a beautiful, jolly old man with a chocolate complexion, a white beard, and red suit. And I've got the special offer just for you, greentopgifts.com. And all you have to do is put in the code COOLSOROR and you will receive 10% off of your purchase. GreenTopGifts.com. That is the place for you to go for all of your wrapping paper and gifts for the holiday season. Tell Clarence Claus I said, what's happening? I love Clarence. He's so cute. GreenTopGifts.com. Cool Sora is your code for 10% off. Now, back to the show. Man. And, you know, you've always done things. I mean, just thinking back on just your story in these last 24 minutes, you just go after it. You just go after it. And so to see you go after being an NFL agent had to be like, did you ever surprise yourself?
Well, when people talk about me, that's when I hear it. Because to me, I'm like, it's no big deal. I'm like, what's next?
Yeah.
You know, what are we going to do? But when people begin to speak about me or, you know, they say my accolades, I'm like, that lady, she sounds amazing.
It's like, that's me.
Yeah, and that's me. Yeah. Absolutely. And, you know, I do things, I guess I would say, in an unconventional manner. You know, with children, people were like, why don't you just go get a job and work for a firm? Because you have, and my children were little. When I started law school, my son was 4 mm-hmm. and my daughter was 1.
Okay.
So I had 2 little ones, you know, going into law school. And then I had 2 more.
Okay.
By the time I finished law school and took the bar, I had 4.
So wow. So everybody was little. You had 4 under 6 at that. Well, 4 under at what?
Under 8.
At that time.
Yeah. Because I had 3 of them walk across the stage with me in law school.
Oh, wow.
And so they, you know, that was really a special moment. And everybody at Emory remembers me having them. I mean, I had my babies there. If something went down at the time when I was married with my first husband, if something went down, we didn't have a sitter or something, hey.
They came with you.
Right there in the class with me. I was like, we're not going to miss these lessons.
Goodness.
And so But everybody embraced them, you know. Yeah. I mean, embraced my kids. I loved it. Emory was a great place, and I was able to do so many things with my children, mm-hmm. you know, and have them along for the ride. And I'm glad that for me that I did it that way.
Yeah.
Because now I feel like I'm really in the groove of my career, and yeah. now my children are older.
Mm-hmm.
And I had, you know.
And they can understand, like, now we get it. Although they may not remember being in the classroom, but they are.
Right.
They have a better right. understanding.
Right. But they say they remember. They, you know, they remember things. You know, mom, you know, you are a room mom. I could help and then study for the bar at night. They were like, but you would stay up all night. You know, what were you doing? I was like, you know, hey, had to study for the bar.
Yeah.
We had to, you know, I had to get this together. My thing was everyone wanted me to go work for someone. And I said, well, I'm already broke. So how are we going to make this work? And so for me, I used to bartend through college.
Did
and
you?
Through law school. And so I continued to do that even after law school. And people were like, well, how many degrees do you have in
right.
this bar?
And you've been, right.
I said, I gotta have a vision. I'm telling you, I'm not going to work for anybody. I'm going to pass this bar. I'm going to continue working in this, you know, mm-hmm. in the restaurant, the club, wherever I was. And I'm going to build my firm from the ground up. And that's what I did. Once I started my firm, I continued working at that place for a year.
Stop. So you were a lawyer during the day.
Yeah.
And you were slinging drinks at night.
Yep. I sure was. I did that for a year until I got where I wanted to be and began building up, you know, my firm. You had to, you know, the grind. And I tell people, you know, they see me now, and they, even when you see entertainers, you're like, oh, that was an overnight success. No. Uh-uh. You know, this came with work. I mean, blood, sweat, and tears, and you have to sacrifice.
You do.
And so for me, with my children being little and I had gone through a divorce, there were a lot of things that I had to juggle. And for me, it made sense
because mm-hmm.
I said, I'm not going to work for anyone. I am going to do this. And that's yeah. exactly what I did.
Man. So bartending, law firm, divorce. Where did breast cancer come in this picture?
Oh, wow. That's a good one. So I will say about 2007, at this point, I was still bartending.
Okay.
And working. And 2008, February 2008, I was diagnosed with breast cancer.
Did you find it or you went for a mammogram?
No, I was only 29.
Yeah.
So no mammogram.
No need. Yeah.
I went in just for my regular checkup. Just going in for my annual. And my daughter was about 17 months, so I was just stopped breastfeeding.
Okay.
So I went in, and he just said, something doesn't feel right. I felt fine, and I wasn't sick. And so we just test after test after test. They kept saying, you're going to be fine. You're 29. You're young, you know. And then that's when they hit me with it over the phone, I might add, and told me. And believe it or not, it didn't devastate me.
Okay.
It made me think about the time that maybe I would have left.
Okay.
And what I needed to do. So it really made me, it put even more of a fire under me.
Yeah.
To really say, this is what I need to do. I really need to continue building up this firm. And what else is it that I want to do?
Mm-hmm.
And once the breast cancer came, you know, I went through, had the surgery.
Did you have a lumpectomy or mastectomy?
No, I decided to have a double mastectomy.
You did a double mastectomy, mm-hmm, okay.
With reconstruction. Okay. So for me at the time, I'm not sure you can understand this, after breastfeeding, I was ready
to get
rid of them.
Them things be so sad after breastfeeding. They are not your friends anymore. I mean, prior to these babies, I used to have some full 34 C's. Now I'm like a 32 B.
Exactly.
Not no B. I'm a book.
Exactly.
So I understand.
So yeah. I was happy. I was like, wow, I'm going to get some new friends. And I will tell you this, my breast cancer story, that's a separate story in itself. At that time, I didn't have health insurance.
Oh, my goodness.
You know, I'm trying to build and work at night and
yeah.
at the firm and everything. And so I was just like, well, what do I do now? And, you know, I went through the local health department, and they covered breast cancer. But every doctor I went to said, well, we don't take that coverage because, they don't pay well. So, you know, they don't pay us enough. And I'm like,
well, here you are sick.
Right.
And he's worrying about money.
Right. So I'm like, well, what do I do? The money is not going to come from anywhere. And I will tell you, and that's where I say it's nothing but God. My good friend of mine, her mother worked for Northside Hospital. And she said, well, you just need to go visit this doctor and this doctor. And I said, I can't afford these doctors. You know, there's a plastic surgeon. Her name is Diane Alexander. She is like one of my angels. I went to see her and I said, well, I mean, what you do is great. They showed me all the books of reconstruction. And I said, but I don't have the proper insurance for this.
Right.
And she said, okay. And she said, well, I don't know, you know, what we can do, but we'll see. And so a couple weeks went by. I went to see the other doctor that my friend's mother recommended. And he said, well, you know, I'll work with you. You have two doctors. I had a surgeon, then I had a plastic surgeon.
Okay.
They come in and do everything at one time. Right, so you have one that removes and then one that adds, mm-hmm. you know, and does the reconstruction. Well, about a week later, I get a call from the plastic surgeon's office. And she said, we are entering you into this program.
Come on, program.
And everything is going to be free. I said, look at God.
Seriously.
I mean, I fell to my knees that everything was taken care
of.
I didn't have to pay for anything. So they put me in this program and I had these special expanders, tissue expanders that were new.
Oh, okay.
And she said, well, we're going to put you in this program and you're going to get a stipend for being in the program.
You ain't, God said, let me take care of it and give you some money?
And gave me some money.
Come on.
They said, you're going to be in this program. We're going to give you money. And I mean, that was nothing but God. Everything was paid for. I didn't have to do radiation or chemo.
Okay.
And I came out of that. And I mean, it's just a blessing.
Yeah.
A blessing to go through that and to have people that are there for you. And now when I go back to visit her, because I just had a surgery last year. I had to have another surgery.
Okay.
And she said, oh, look at you. You know, you're fancy. She's like, I'm just so proud of you, because when you came in here, you know, you were barely practicing law. You had the babies. And she was like, you know, I'm just so, you know, I feel like you're my daughter.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
So, you know, you have those people. And that's why I tell people, when I go to visit them in jail and I see them and they see, you know, I have a Chanel bag or I have this and that, I'm like, you don't know where I came from. And what I'm telling you is life can be better for you on the other side.
Yes.
No matter what you have going on. Because people always say, well, you don't know where I came from.
And it's like, you don't know where I came from.
And then I have to really get, let me tell you where I came from. And what you can do, because people will always want to throw the woe is me card out. And I'm like, you can live past that.
Yeah,
you can get past it. Trust me. Mm-hmm. I've been in the dark. I've been in a house with no electricity for 2 weeks at a time. Trust me, you can come out of this, but it's what you decide to do. It's what you decide to do with your life. And so that's what being on the criminal defense side, that I really love, that I can mentor and help young people and even older people and tell them my story, even a piece of it.
Yes.
And say, this is where you can be.
Yeah.
And then on the NFL side, I will say a lot of these players come from very poor families. And when they look at me, they see one thing, but I really have to give them, hey, this is where I came from.
It's the backstory.
And this is what I want. This is where I want to help your son
get
to and help him to build his brand as I have built mine. And when they see that, they can appreciate that and they respect me for that.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, honey, you're dropping lots of dimes today. currently, which is huge for you and your firm, you're representing over 200 former NFL players in the NFL concussion lawsuit and current NFL players. How did you even get this case? And I know you can't talk a lot about it, but how were you even approached to even represent these players?
Right. Well, I had some former players come to me and they kept asking me, are you, you know, what people don't know with the CTE, this has been going on for years as far as the lawsuit and everything. This is now the settlement.
Oh, okay.
What people don't understand is that this has been years in the making.
Okay.
It's not just all of a sudden 2 years and now we have a settlement. No, it's been some years. And so everyone kept asking me, I mean, you're a lawyer, can you represent us? And I was like, well, no, I'm really just trying to represent on the agency side. I really don't want to get into that side and do the civil work. That's considered civil work. And they kept asking me, and I had a friend who was diagnosed with, he's manic depressive and bipolar.
Okay.
And we were.
A former player?
Yes, former player. And we were talking about just the different things that he went through in the NFL. Mm-hmm. And then now, what's going on with him. And we don't know that the CT is the reason why, but we
because
do believe.
Because you can't find out until they pass away.
Yeah. But we do believe that it's because of the hits that he took that he is now, you know, having these problems. And so I said, you know, I'll help you. So it went from him and then to the next person and to the next person. And it was just like, well, I have this great attorney and she's really for us. And I began to visit families. And when you begin to visit families and you see how these players, former players, are living, and because, and it's not by choice, it's just because they don't have the wherewithal, or they don't have all of their faculties to work a regular job, as we would say. I said, I got to get in this and really help.
Yeah.
And so that's where it started from. And it just built, you know, went on from there.
Okay. Does Roger Goodell know your name?
I don't know, but hopefully he will soon. He will.
So I guess what would be the thing is you hope to gain at least some money for these players to be able to help themselves.
Right. Okay. Absolutely. The baseline is $1.5 million, and the top that you can get is $5.5
million. Per player.
Per player.
Okay.
And really, when we look at it as a quality of life issue, that's not really a lot of money.
It's not.
It's not. But people say, well, you know, this is the risk that they took. We understand that. Mm-hmm. And it's still an inherent risk. But I want to make sure that we get them to the point where they're whole as possible, to the point of whole. They will never really truly be whole. The mm-hmm. money can't cure what they have going on with their health. But it can help them with their families and help them to sustain their family.
Yeah.
And, you know, and just give them that boost to then, you know, move on with their lives and have some sense of normalcy.
Right, right. How long do you think this process will take? And has it been taking longer than you want it to?
Oh, absolutely. The process, well, the deadline for registration for players was this past August.
Okay.
So you can no longer sign up. But we urged even players who are just out to sign up, because as long as you sign up, you have 45 years to then go into the settlement if something occurs later on, because you don't know.
You have no idea.
You know, at 35, you may feel fine, but maybe at 55, you might not feel so, so good. So we are now waiting. There's a process, and they have to go to certain doctors. And of course, you know, there are doctors that are.
Mm-hmm. You don't have to say it. I know it.
Yeah. So there's a long line that they have to go through if they're not going to pay for certain doctors.
Gotcha.
So the free doctors, it's going to take longer, of course, and to get these reports back. And then there's a whole nother thing that you have to do, a whole nother process once they are qualified.
Okay.
So the first thing is getting them qualified, but you got to get them to the doctor.
Mm-hmm.
And then a lot of them don't have money. And so that's for us to determine, okay, we're going to go ahead and pay for these players to be seen by these doctors so we can begin their process.
Yeah. Yeah. I had someone recently on the show, former NFL player, whose only wish, cause he has headaches and stuff like that. His only wish is to be able to dance at his daughter's wedding. And that's a real wish that he hopes to get to. Yeah, mm-hmm. So he may be one of your clients. I'll talk to you after we close out here. But yeah, so, you know, and I hope that for him because he's one of my good friends. Aww. He really is. He really is. Okay, so in 2000, you became a member of Alpha Kappa Alpha Sorority Incorporated via the Gamma Theta chapter at Hampton University. Did Alpha Kappa Alpha choose you or did you choose Alpha Kappa Alpha?
I will say both.
Okay.
I will say both. My professor.
Yep.
She was just everything to me. And I said, you know, whatever organization she's a part of, whatever she's doing, I want to be a part of it. Not to mention, this professor is more chocolate than me.
So yes.
She was just everything. Just my everything.
Yeah.
You know, and I was like, you know, you're a member of, at the time, I didn't know anything about sororities or fraternities. And Gamma Theta was not on the yard at the time.
Okay.
And so I said, well, you know, what's this sorority about? And she, you know, she told me, but she was really kind of laid back about it.
Uh-huh.
She didn't really, you know, well, this is what you need to do. She said she wanted me to really explore and find out for myself.
Okay.
But when they came back on the yard, I had friends that were on that first line.
Uh-huh.
And then from there, I began to see what they were doing,
right.
You know, the community service and then as well as the sisterhood. And
yeah.
I was like, I want to be a part of that. And then with, you know, and I was like, and I want to be a part of the first. I was like, they're the first. I said, okay.
Yeah.
And I was like, this is what I want to be a part of. And so many people told me, you know, you're not going to make it. Cause at that time I had a baby.
Okay.
And so they said, well, I don't, you know, good luck.
Right.
Good luck.
Right.
Because the AKAs, you know, they're very particular.
Uh-huh.
And I said, well, you know what? I'm going to do this. And I went for it. And I mean, at the time, I said, well, my resume speaks for itself.
Right.
I think at that time I had like a 3.8.
Right, right.
I said, and I have a baby. But I did so much at school that I don't even think the baby was an issue.
Mm-hmm.
And he was there at my probate.
Nice.
He was there at my probate. My boo was there with me. But,
and he's the one that's in college now.
He's the one in college.
Wow.
College baby's in college.
Yes.
And so for me, I would say that's one of the best decisions I made in my life.
Beautiful.
Really.
Beautiful.
I mean, that's the sisterhood is unlike any other.
My right.
family doesn't really understand it. I have no Greeks in my family.
Right. They're no worries. Like,
yeah, exactly.
Right.
They're like,
what is this
sorority?
Right.
You know, you just, oh my gosh, you and this. But I will say, you know, my sorority support me,
mm-hmm.
even in business.
Mm-hmm.
They call me for everything, even if I can't handle it.
Right.
I said, well, look, I can't handle your tax issues, but I'm going to send you to someone who can. But I love the camaraderie and the sisterhood.
Absolutely. Beautiful.
Yeah, it doesn't get any better.
It doesn't. Beautiful. That is so beautiful. What is your definition of cool?
My definition of cool is someone who is confident,
mm-hmm.
but doesn't take themselves too seriously.
Yeah.
That they can't relate to people and be relatable. I like that I am able to relate to all different types of people and be grounded.
Yes.
And be down to earth. I'm always told, you're so down
cool.
to earth.
Right.
You know, you're so cool, you know, and I've always liked having that, you know, kind of cool persona that, you know, you can approach me.
Yes.
And now that I've come into my beauty and, you know, I'm like, oh, I'm cute now.
Right.
But, you know, I don't want people to see or to think that that's the only thing.
Mm-hmm.
But once, you know, they get to know me and they start talking to me, they're like, man, you know, you're so cool.
Yeah.
And it's just, you have to have a level of confidence and carry yourself in a manner, but again, be well-rounded and be grounded.
Yes. Yes. Well-rounded and grounded. That is the equivalency of cool. How can people find you if they want to just, I don't know, maybe there's some NFL player listening to you who's got it. How can they find you?
I am on Instagram at Tiffany Porter. Just
very easy.
All together, very easy. My agency website is zenithsportsagency.com. And Zenith is Zenith, sportsagency.com. I am also on Twitter.
Yes.
At Agent ESQ.
Yes.
Agent?
That's Agent Porter ESQ. Hey, look
you.
At me.
Thank you.
Agent
I'm trying
Porter.
To keep up with all of them. So
yes.
Agent Porter ESQ.
Nice.
Yes.
Beautiful. Well, Tiffany, this has been absolutely fabulous.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Golly. Look, when you say golly, I mean, we came out the gate. Usually I ease into it. We came out the gate. Like, look, this is what happened when I was a little girl. I'm like, wait. Okay. But that's a good thing. I know you have inspired someone today to keep pushing no matter your circumstances. And I'm so glad that you are a living example, not only for the world to see, but for your children to see and your mother to see. And you broke that cycle, and we're so happy for it.
Thank you.
You are a beautiful soul, sis.
Thank you.
Tiffany Porter, everybody.
Hello, everybody. My name is Tiffany Porter. I am an NFL agent and criminal defense attorney, and I am a cool soror of Alpha Kappa Alpha Sorority Incorporated.